listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
We are here today because of the de facto Maduro regime's refusal to allow humanitarian aid to enter Venezuela on February 23rd, which led to deaths, injuries, and violence on two international borders.
That was the U.S. Special Envoy on Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, speaking at the U.N. Security Council in New York on Monday. It was a session called by Abrams to discuss the situation in Venezuela. Abrams has the distinction of having been convicted of lying to Congress about his role in a similar attempt at regime change then in Nicaragua back in the 1980s.
Those actions once again showed the true intentions and nature of the Maduro regime. And while Venezuelans were shot and beaten and killed as they tried to bring food and medicine into their country, Maduro literally was dancing in Caracas.
Abrams' claims were met with serious opposition from Russia, China, Bolivia, and a number of other Security Council members, but in particular from the foreign minister of Venezuela, Jorge Arriaza. He spoke for approximately 35 minutes, and we bring you as much of his commentary as time will allow.
First of all, we wish to greet the constitutional president of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, Mr. Nicolás Maduro Moros, and the Venezuelan people who are still subject to international aggression. And it is only fitting that we should discuss this here in the Security Council at a time when powerful countries and indeed other countries that are subject to that country, and here I am not referring to the United States subject. Colombia is organizing an aggression against the sovereignty of a free people in the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. This is an issue which is no doubt a threat to the peace and security of our region, which is part of international peace and security, and it is a process that is a clear violation in many parts of the United Nations Charter. Allow me, with all due respect, Madam Undersecretary General Rosemary DiCarlo, to say to you that your briefing, your explanation was biased. It always sought to disseminate information from one source, and incidentally, with all due respect, I do not at all agree with what we is not in line with what we spoke of with our in our meeting with Secretary General Antonio Guterres. We denounce the United States government for organizing, financing, and leading this clear aggression against Venezuela. This is an aggression that began quite a few years back. There are some countries where scandals were created because they said so that other countries would intervene in their electoral campaigns. In Venezuela, the intervention of the United States and its governments rather, took place and have been taking place since our Bolivarian Revolution came to power on the 2nd of February 1999, 24/7, 365 days of the 20 years that have elapsed. We would like to take this opportunity to denounce here the information that have been
movimientos de movilización de tropas militares en el Caribe.
The counting of information provided by Cuba and Russian Federation
en Europa occidental,
saying that
oriental, para dirigirlas
bought weapons from them and Eastern Europe for the
y generar una intervención en Venezuela.
Radical opposition for an intervention in Venezuela. In the case of Venezuela, we have always heard calls from the United States and the centers of Western politics for the politics of death. We've heard calls for the politics of death. Ladies and gentlemen, this last weekend there was a well-orchestrated operation to violate the sacred sovereignty of the territory of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. And our national Bolivarian armed forces, our police were able to contain it without using any kind of deadly force. And that is why you saw that on the two main bridges between Venezuela and Colombia in the northern department of Santander and in Tache, we saw tear gas used, we saw gradual methods used
¿saben de dónde vino la agresión? Desde Colombia.
Y esos bandidos que law enforcement. The aggression came from the Colombian side,
no, señores,
and not from our regime. Here, this is not the gangs of Maduro's government. These are Colombians or Venezuelans, we're not sure, but they are attacking our law enforcement personnel in Venezuela under the protection of the police of Colombia. And ladies and gentlemen,
these
men who used Molotov cocktail bombs, set fire to the famous humanitarian trucks which came out in the press. And here we also have trucks. And let me tell you, when the truck was inspected, it turned out that there wasn't just food and medicines in the truck, but there were there was equipment for barricades, there was nails, chicken wire, and so on and so forth. And this is what is used by the opposition in Venezuela. So this is the evidence. We have video, and you can view them. This truck was set
la ayuda humanitaria, pero
was burned on the
tenemos heridos.
Bridge, but we also have those who were injured, and most of those who were injured, unfortunately,
no se
the media did not report this, but most of them are soldiers,
de la fuerza,
law enforcement personnel, policemen from our security forces in Venezuela. I have the report here. This is a bus on Venezuelan territory. But these thugs,
masked thugs,
bandits,
no son chavistas,
are not chavistas. They're from the Venezuelan opposition, as we saw in 2014 and 2017, and they left our country in flames over a period of 4 months in 2017, and there was no condemnation from any of those other countries. And here this is a bridge on the Colombian side, and this is Colombian migration protected by Colombian security forces. There they are. We also see the use of the Red Cross emblem without authorization from the Red Cross movement or federation or the international movement, and this was denounced by the Red Cross. This happened in Colombia. This is on what the bridges, homemade bombs with gasoline from Venezuela, which was smuggled into Colombia. So that's the reality, unfortunately. We see our security forces, that's the Venezuelan barrier, and the truck was burnt here, and they are throwing bombs from that side where I'm pointing. But it's so easy to say that Maduro is massacring his people and is burning the trucks with humanitarian aid, and they even went so far as to say that we are in violation of the Geneva Convention on Humanitarian Law. Please, that's hypocrisy. This is what was in the truck. Nails, wire. When the security forces inspected it, this is what they found. This was to set up barricades, block the roads. And this is our last photograph. I'd like to show this to the representative of the United Kingdom. By coincidence, this is a warship just a few miles off one of the islands in the Caribbean. And this arrived on Saturday. Why? The Southern Command of the United States met with the head of armed forces in Colombia to talk about humanitarian assistance to Venezuela. Since when do military personnel meet in other countries to talk about humanitarian assistance? Then it should be the humanitarian organizations that meet, because they are the ones that do that work. That's the principle, not military personnel. And all the messages sent by Mr. Trump directly, and Mr. Pence, Mr. Bolton, Mr. Pompeo, Mr. Marco Rubio, Mr. Duque, Mr. Guaido, that's the chain of command in that order. That's the chain of command of the intervention against Venezuela, so that the military in Venezuela would rise up and come out against this constitution. How many of them actually did that? I've lost count of how many tweets have been put out by Mr. Bolton with gangster-like language against the dignity of our military and our people and our revolutionary forces. This is something that I have to tell you is incredible, but as Mr. Elliot Abrams, as I said to Mr. Abrams at our last meeting here in New York, the coup failed. That was the last chapter in the coup on Saturday. And I can tell you, read my lips, it failed. And now is the time for us to return to sanity and to respect international law and respect Venezuela's constitution. We are waiting to see the members of the Venezuelan opposition, Mr. Guaido or whoever else. They will decide who will be the one to sit down with the government, the constitutional government of Venezuela, and then among Venezuelans we can build our own solution without intervention, interference from anyone, much less the United States. Much less the United States. We can only hope that the White House will give Mr. Guaido the authorization and the opposition to sit down with our government so that we can come up with a way out. No, not a way out, but rather a solution to this current political situation in Venezuela, and to do so through dialogue and negotiation. Mexico, Uruguay, and CARICOM countries have opposed the Montevideo mechanism, and we're here at the table. Tell us when we can go to Mexico or Montevideo or Bridgetown so that we can sit down without any agenda, with our constitution in hand. There are elections, maybe, or there may be other possible solutions, maybe, and that's why we have a rich constitution. The European Union and some Latin American countries have also come up with a mechanism known as International Contact Group. You are welcome. The only thing is that we met with them. I met with them for 4 hours. I personally with the team and then the vice president in Caracas last week. And we hugged them and said thank you. And we also agreed upon a mechanism for humanitarian and technical assistance from the European Union through the United Nations to Venezuela. But that did not come out in the news, none of the media. But this contact group wanted to impose, and several of you have said it, wanted to impose the outcome of a dialogue and only one single solution, which incidentally, it's strange to me to see that some European countries agree with High Representative Federica Mogherini, who characterized this alleged humanitarian assistance as politicized and said that the EU should not be involved as long as they do not meet the criteria for independence, impartiality, and such the like for humanitarian assistance, and to ensure that this is the case before they get involved. But we also have to denounce the use of Colombia's territory to launch aggressions against Venezuela. It is painful for us because 200 years ago, Liberator Simón Bolívar, 200 years ago, Bolívar was crossing the Andes Mountains and sacrificing, along with his team, lives to liberate Colombia. And he did not leave with any loot, no territory. He returned to Venezuela. The Security Council is not here to make war. The Security Council is not here to establish conditions for others to make war. The Security Council is not here to endorse violent breaches of the United Nations Charter. Rather, the Security Council is here to maintain international peace and security and to preserve future generations from the scourge of war. Save them from the scourge of war. Let's save Venezuela and this generation because the threat is today. The threat of the scourge of war is here today, and we do so. We call on you. We propose, with all due respect, as the ambassador of Russian Federation did, with all due respect, we would demand, we call on the Security Council to come up with a resolution. And what are we asking for? The rejection of the threat or the use of force per se against the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela, and to rule that out as an option once and for all, because Mr. Trump, Mr. Pence, Mr. Bolton, Mr. Pompeo, Mr. Marco Rubio, Guaido, and Duque are putting this on the table. Look, here's Mr. Pence saying all options are on the table, and we have Mr. Bolton also saying the same thing, as is Mr. Rubio. Look at this. After 40 tweets against President Nicolas Maduro from Mr. Rubio, he's representing the United States people and the people of Florida. These are the values of the United States people? To call for the killing of a president, because in the context, obviously, this is what this picture means. This is what he does. And there are no recriminations or consequences for him. And the president of the National Assembly, Juan Guaido, said that Saturday's events are compelling me to take a decision that we must keep all options on the table to ensure that our country is liberated. All the options. What is he saying? He's saying we want a military intervention against my own country. He probably doesn't have family or friends, because when the bombs fall in Venezuela, they will not differentiate between the Chavistas and non-Chavistas, who is rich, who is poor. And we have already seen this in Iraq. We have seen this in Afghanistan. We have also seen it in Libya. We have also seen it in Syria. How many countries have we seen this? Wherever the United States goes, they leave a humanitarian crisis there. And then who has to clean up that? Who is responsible for that humanitarian crisis? Mr. Maduro was saying that the United States destroys countries and invades them, saying that there are WMDs. Millions of people die, and they celebrate it. They see that they lynch a head of state such as Muammar Gaddafi, and then one of their senators laughs. How many people died in Venezuela? They're expecting a tragedy. It's all planned. As it, when we had snipers in 2002 paid for by the United States to shoot President Chavez. It's all planned. There's a show that has been rehearsed. It didn't work out, but Mr. Maduro was blamed. But they hold Maduro responsible. If people die, they say, we have been investigating the events. There was an event, an attempt to take over military barracks, and everything had to be done to keep public order. We are investigating everything, but once again, they are accusing us. This really is humiliating. But allow me to continue. What are we asking for? Rejection of the threat or use of force against Venezuela. It may even be enough. But in addition to that, based on the United Nations Charter, there should be a rejection of the blockade and the stealing of our natural resources, which is causing the suffering of our people. And this has been ignored. $33 billion. That's the cost since August 2017 till today. But in addition to that, $15 billion is the cost of the expropriation of our petroleum company by the United States. $120 billion in gold in the bank in England. And in Belgium as well, plus tens of billions of dollars that have been blocked and frozen in banks today. So how can we import what we need in Venezuela? People are working in Venezuela. People are going to school. People are going to university. And they're going to the beach. Carnival is all around the corner. This is what they're going to do this year as they did last year. Yes, we have an inflation problem, but we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And we're starting to see a stabilizing of the exchange rate. But they're saying every day, oh, there's a dramatic worsening of the situation and we have to intervene in Venezuela. So you are predicating everything on lies. The premise is lies, and we're saying this strongly that this is the case. It's all propaganda. And this is what we saw on Saturday. Would it be to us the security, too much to ask the Security Council that you all sign a resolution rejecting the use of force against Venezuela? Or do we have to resort to the United States option, which is everything on the table? All options are on the table.
We
are being used for
the
U.S. campaign efforts because they need a Cuban vote. So Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua are being used, and they use foreign policy to ensure that Mr. Trump can ensure that he will be nominated and win Florida. So he has to attack Mr. Maduro. There are many scandals during the campaign, and he has to maintain his integrity as a president. So perhaps he said, probably what I should do is come up with with a military operation against Venezuela. And this is what we're seeing. And some countries are supporting this. I have to say it openly. Mr. Bolton has said that it's because of the oil. He has said it on many occasions. And Mr. Trump said we have to come away with loot once we intervene. We can't just intervene and kill people and have political control over the government. No, we also have to make sure that we have land and resources, as they did in the past. But in the case of Venezuela, it's oil. Mr. Bolton has said the United States companies will go and produce oil in Venezuela. Please.
Venezuela fue agredida.
Venezuela was attacked, and spokespersons, including some from the United Nations system, are claiming that we were the aggressors last weekend. And it's true that in some cases, it's painful to hear this. Our National Police, our National Guard, our National Armed Forces, in a gesture of stoicism, of restraint and proportionality, were able to contain the craziness, the madness. But it's easier to say Maduro has been massacring people, has been killing people. It's just a script to justify war.
El señor Trump ha amenazado
Mr. Trump has been threatening migrants that if migrants come to the southern border of the United States, they will shoot them. And who says anything about that?
Mr. Trump declared a
humanitarian crisis in the south of the United States because he wants to build a racist wall. So what would happen if Cuba, Venezuela, or Nicaragua were to come up with a convoy and try to force through the southern border to get to the population in the south of the United States where there's a humanitarian emergency, saying that this was a humanitarian assistance effort? What would happen if they were to try to do that? Ask yourself that question. There is a lot of hypocrisy afoot here. It's a lot of arrogance at play here. And this is what the United Nations Security Council should underscore and highlight here. Look, Mr. Rivera was wounded, another person with a fractured thigh, officials that were wounded. We have others with injuries to the wrist and so on and so forth. But who is talking about this? Do you ever see this in the media? Who of you here mentioned this in your statement today? But it's as if they don't exist, as if the Venezuelans who voted for Nicolas Maduro last year didn't exist, as if there is not a Chavismo movement, which is supported by more than half of the country. It's easy to try to erase history, but you will not be able to do it, ladies and gentlemen. There is also a false flag operation with some tanks of the National Guard, because some of them had been paid $20,000 to desert. And there are some diplomats behind that effort. Those National Guards deserted and drove the tanks against people, and of course this was covered by Chilean media. But who denounced that? Who here denounced that?
Por el señor Piñera.
No, we hear
por el señor Guaidó y por el
presidente Mr. Guaidó and Duque and others.
Entonces,
talking
operaciones de falsa bandera.
So these, they're false flag. We have two challenges in Colombia, cocaine and false flag operations, unfortunately. And that's what they're known for, cocaine and false flags. And this is what I'd like to bring to your attention today.
Venezuela quede por fuera del debate interno en los Estados Unidos y su campaña electoral.
Venezuela is staying out of the internal affairs of the United States and the electoral campaign here.
¿Dónde fue el señor
Where was Mr. Bolton when he
¿Dónde fue el señor Pence
went to make his statements? He went to Miami. Mr. Pence went to Miami as well. Where did Mr. Trump go last week when he wanted to say and make all these announcements and of sanctions against Venezuela? He went to Miami. The former governor of Florida and others are paving the way, and they're using Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, but we can't allow that. We shouldn't allow that. Here is the United Nations Charter. How can we allow that? The coup has failed. The military intervention, and even yesterday, Mr. Duque and Mr. Pence and Deputy Guaido called on the group of countries that have been mounted against Venezuela. It's now called the Lima Group, even though Lima is a brother country. Many countries opposed the use of force and military interventions that were being proposed by those gentlemen to attack Venezuela militarily. Madam Bachelet, who I'll be meeting with soon, had to denounce it. How can we seek to intervene militarily, intervene in a country without trying to do anything before that? And I think there's time enough for an alternative solution. So there is the need for a resolution, a peaceful resolution. And I insist, how can we solve this situation? We can call it an institutional crisis. In our case, we can characterize it thusly. I would even go so far as to say that it is one of the five branches of government in Venezuela, and one is in conflict with us. And we are prepared to sit down and to come up with solutions with Mr. Guaido and whoever else wishes to sit down with us, but they don't wish to sit down and talk to us. They say there's no time for dialogue. Mr. Maduro has to go. The regime has to change. There has been an invasion of Venezuela. But there's no call on this Security Council in the council or spokespersons to say you have to sit down. They say that we have lost time, wasted time. But what happened last year? I was appointed foreign minister.
Estaba yo en República Dominicana, hablando con el señor presidente Danilo Medina, hablando con el canciller Miguel Vargas, llamando desde allí al expresidente Zapatero.
Call on ex-president Zapatero and Mr. Julio Jorge to sit down at a table to dialogue, and in November, December, January, and February we were there. Everything had been agreed. Then the Venezuelan opposition came in because they had an order not to sign what was agreed upon, and they made us waste and lose time and made the international community lose time as well. But they said that it was Mr. Maduro who didn't want dialogue. We can't abide and countenance so much lies. I love my country. I love my people. How can you say that we just want people to die?
Yo creo que sin parangón en la historia de América Latina que se ha hecho es durante la Revolución Bolivariana. El pueblo venezolano no sabía lo que era la inversión del petróleo hasta que llegó Hugo Chávez al poder.
What it was to invest in oil until
a pesar del bloqueo,
Chávez came, and we have been making progress despite the blockade and isolation and everything. We continue to see homes built. We did not see any schools closed or any universities closed, and we continue to promote the social rights of Venezuelans. All of this is free. We're still providing subsidized food, and we've deployed 1,000 tools to redistribute the oil wealth and to be ensure that we can.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. The Trump administration's attempts to impose regime change on Venezuela appear to be faltering. The self-proclaimed interim president, Juan Guaido, hasn't gained much traction. This may explain the administration's escalating rhetoric. After all, we are told a military option is still on the table. Crosstalking Venezuela, I'm joined by my guest, Don DeBar in New York. He's an anti-war activist and host of a daily radio program. In Geneva, we have Alfred Desaias. He is a professor of law at Geneva School of Diplomacy and a former UN independent expert on the promotion of democratic and equitable international order. And in Ottawa, we cross to Isaac Nohan-Sarfati. He is a Venezuelan-Canadian professor at the University of Ottawa. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Alfred first in Geneva and congratulate him on his report that he presented to the United Nations. I thought it was very enlightening. I wish more people would read it, particularly in the media and maybe in the American political class. Alfred, why does the United States feel it is incumbent upon itself to fix the problems of Venezuela? No one denies Venezuela has a lot of problems, but why should an outside power like the United States that has a very checkered, and I'm being very polite here, checkered history in meddling in Latin America? So, I mean, why is the Trump administration and, of all people, Elliot Abrams appointed to fix Venezuela?
Well, you know Stephen Kinzer's book, Overthrow, and William Bloom's book, Killing Hope. It is an American tradition to tell Latin America to apply what we call the Monroe Doctrine. And we have a long history, Bay of Pigs and the Iran-Contra affair, Nicaragua, Panama, Grenada, Haiti, etc. We've been changing governments all the time, participating in the coup against Zelaya in Honduras. So this is nothing new. I mean, the United States is a hegemon and does like to deal with Latin America as colonies. Of course, Venezuela is, after all, an incredibly rich country, yeah, with the largest oil reserves, with enormous gold reserves and bauxite reserves and coltan reserves. So it's a bonanza for business.
Okay,
it's a bonanza
for American Alfred, so it's just an asset play. Let me go to Isaac here in Ottawa. Isaac, is this, and it's very open, unlike, you know, other forced regime change in the last 2 decades or so, this administration is very open that it really wants to overthrow the government, impose its own guy, somebody that was hardly known even within the country. How do you think this forced imposed regime change is going? Because over the weekend, it looked like a farce over the weekend. Go ahead in Ottawa.
Yeah. Hi, Peter. Well, this is not about the U.S. trying to impose something. This is about the Venezuelan society saying enough is enough. Enough is enough of a violent regime. Enough is enough of a corrupt regime. Enough is enough of hyperinflation. Enough is enough of shortages. Enough is enough. You have a huge majority of Venezuelans saying, that's it. We want change. And we want change, if possible, peacefully. We want change in order to have a free election. And we want change because these people, this regime, cannot last anymore, any longer. That's it. And what is happening here is that you have actually, I think Alfred is somewhat misreading the situation, because what is happening here, you have not only the U.S., you have most of Latin American countries. You have Canada saying, we won't change. The only
What right does Canada have to say about the fate of Venezuela? Let me move over. Now we have two hegemons. Okay, Don. I want free, equal time for everyone. Yeah. I told that before we started the recording here. Let's go to Don right now. Don. How is this a regime change playing out? Because it seems to me, because of the fiasco over the weekend on the bridge, which was filmed by so many people, and it was quite obvious who incited the violence there. But then you have within the same news cycle, the rhetoric is increased to, they always say that, you know, all options are on the table here. Is this something that do you think should happen, could happen? Certainly it shouldn't. And why should they listen to someone that is under the Constitution of Venezuela is a nobody still, okay? You know, does Trump want to risk his reelection fortunes on another failed regime change expedition that we saw all through the Middle East for the last two decades? Go ahead, Don.
Well, I'll go into the details of this later, but there are billions of assets of Venezuela's that are in litigation in U.S. courts with a variety of multinational corporations attempting to seize them. And having the U.S. recognize someone under their control as president means that he can walk into the court, basically, and stipulate to whatever the other side wants and release those assets to these multinational corporations. I'll get to that more later. I want to speak about, though, the rhetoric. Because we have Marco Rubio holding up a picture of a murdered Gaddafi. If you think about it, Libya played pretty much the same role in Africa that Venezuela has played in Latin America for the last 20 years, helping to organize it, helping to fund its own independence and build, you know, mutual defense of their sovereignty, standing up together, etc. And Gaddafi, that was his crime. But what Gaddafi did when he took power in 69 was take one of the poorest countries in the world and left it a middle-class country where everyone there owned their own homes, people there were comfortable, free education, free health care, etc. Those are not people that go out into the street. And yet we see a picture of him held up by Rubio as a threat to Maduro. Now, what Rubio needs to know is that there are also people that are like him, greedy little money-grubbing people who go after other people's assets to steal them, and there are photographs of their fate also. The picture of Mussolini, I think, is something that someone needs to put in Rubio's face and show him how history treats people like him.
Yeah, I think Marco Rubio really embarrassed himself with that. But that the embarrassment comes because of hubris here. Let me go back to Geneva. Alfred, let's talk about the opposition here. Is it still as fracturous as it was before? Because we had Isaac talk about elections. Well, it seems that the opposition is boycotting any kind of dialogue. The government is asked for repeatedly met with silence here. And in the last election, they boycotted it. So, I mean, what kind of democratic credentials does the opposition have if they don't want to engage in talks or even participate in an election? Go ahead, in Geneva.
Not very believable. When I was in Venezuela in November, December 2017, I spoke with members of the National Assembly of the opposition, of Fede Cámaras, the Chamber of Commerce, etc. And somehow I had a feeling that they have their conception of what Venezuela is supposed to be, and that socialism is simply not part of it, and therefore they're not interested in genuine dialogue. As you know, the former Spanish Prime Minister, José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, conducted for 2 years.
2 years, yep.
A negotiation face to face of the opposition together with the government, and there were three ambassadors supporting the opposition, three ambassadors of Latin America supporting the government. In any event, on the 6th of February 2018, there was a reasonable compromise. I published the agreement in my report to the UN Human Rights Council. And what happened is that the phone rang and Julio Borges gets the order, no firme, so don't sign. So he didn't sign. So I have a feeling that also the Montevideo mechanism proposed by Mexico and Uruguay, although it's a lovely idea and I very much believe in mediation, it takes two to tango.
Well, it takes two to tango. Exactly here. Let me. I want to go back to Isaac here because it's two against one, and I want to be fair here. Isaac, as a Venezuelan yourself, I mean, would you like to see an American-led military intervention into your country? Go ahead and Ottawa.
No. What I would like to see is a peaceful transition, but unfortunately, we have a regime that is not ready to accept that. We have a criminal regime in Venezuela. I mean, what you are describing as a socialist revolution, this is not the real thing. What we have here is narco generals trafficking with drugs. We have people trafficking with gold in the south of Venezuela. Where you talk about this old asset, Don was talking about it, all these assets and all these issues that Venezuelan companies such as PDVSA have in the U.S., it's because Chavez decided to confiscate these assets. That's the problem.
Yeah,
all the but I think, with all
due respect, this interim president, so well, he wants to confiscate it? I mean, is it a thief stealing from a thief? I mean, that's the logic. It's the logic of this. Okay. Go ahead, Isaac. Keep going.
No, I mean, here, I mean, they bankrupt, they destroyed PDVSA. I mean, Chavistas, including Rafael Ramirez, they destroyed PDVSA. That's why we went from 3.5 million barrels per day before Chavez to a situation now that barely PDVSA produces barely 1.2 million of barrels per day.
That was a drop of oil price as well, wasn't it?
I'd like to come in here, Peter.
Not the case of Russia. That's not the case of Saudi Arabia. It's not even the case of the U.S. I mean, come on.
It's called the global price drop. Everybody was hurt, and Venezuela was hurt the most. I would argue. Okay. All right, gentlemen. We have to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Venezuela. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, let me go back to Don in New York. Don knows me very well, and of course my viewers do, and I'm a very conservative person. I'm not a very big friend of socialism as it has been practiced in the world. Everyone knows that. Having said that, Don, and I'm not being an apologist of Chavez, but I think it's pretty clear to say that a lot of people were enfranchised in every single possible way in Venezuela. I mean, before Chavez, the literacy rate was low, and now it's almost universal. I'm not praising Chavez, I'm praising those programs, all right? So it seems to me that there's millions and millions of Venezuelans that are invested in a future that was being built under a socialist government. The socialist government has made some very big, big mistakes, and I always look at corruption, okay? However, my point is here is that you have a population that is vested in a future for Venezuela when they didn't have that opportunity before. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, beginning with living indoors. Since Chavez, there's been 2.5 million apartments built for people who before had to live in hovels. That's in a country of about 25 million people. That's a huge accomplishment under the conditions that we just heard described in terms of oil production, which, by the way, certainly the U.S. sanctions that have been imposed on Venezuela have had an impact, as well as the litigation trying to tie up the resources of Venezuela in the U.S. courts, like Citgo, have had an impact on Venezuela's entire oil industry. But there are people who are materially invested because their lives are much better than they were before. And they comprise a little better than half. On election day, they comprise between 40% and 55%, depending on the election over the last, you know, period since 1998. So you have people who have an opinion about this, who feel very strongly. I would just say also, when you have aerial views of the competing rallies that go on in Venezuela right now, you have a good idea about that, because you have a million people that show up for Maduro and tens of thousands that show up for the opposition rallies.
I see what the conditions are on the ground. Okay, to give the other position, I will introduce the question here. Isaac, reflect upon what you have heard, and have you been a supporter of these sanctions against your country, and do you support new sanctions? I haven't finished my question. It doesn't seem to have had much impact on the elites because, well, sanctions rarely do. Go ahead, Isaac and Ida.
I'm going to tell you first about the sanctions. I mean, these started as sanctions targeting particular officials, corrupted and violent, and violators of human rights. That's started like that. Now they are focusing on Sitgon PDVSA. Why? Because they want these assets to be transferred to the legitimate government of Juan Guaido in order to benefit the people. I mean, that's the first thing. And talking about the sanctions, if you want to talk about the sanctions and the effect on people, you know, I have my mom, 87 years old, living in Caracas. She was in the hospital last week, and she had to take an antibiotic for an infection, and she couldn't find the antibiotic, and she asked someone living abroad to send the antibiotic. I'm going to tell you another thing. We have power shortages in Caracas every day. My sister, who lives in downtown Caracas, has power shortages every day, and these lack of medication and these.
Well, that's because, but is that because of sanctions? Is that because of sanctions?
Nothing to do. Nothing to do. This is because we have a failed state.
I've given you more than enough, Isaac, be fair. I warned everyone before the recording. Please don't talk over people. You were given your time slot. Alfred, you raised your hand like a good, like a schoolboy wanting to inject something. Go ahead. You're a gentleman with a bow tie. I can't resist. Go ahead, Alfred.
Well, Peter, when I went to Venezuela, I thought, like Isaac, I thought, you know, socialism is a failed model, and it's all Maduro's fault. Now, I spent an enormous time studying the figures, studying, for instance, the book by Pasqualina Curcio, La Mano Visible del Mercado, studying articles that I read in the Le Monde Diplomatique, articles by Mark Weisbrot, by Miguel Tinker Salas, who's written a couple of very clever books on Venezuela. And I am persuaded today that obviously in socialism there are too many ideologues and not enough technocrats, and you need technocrats. But the real crisis is a direct result of the economic war, and the economic war did not start yesterday. The economic war started in 1999. There's been 20 years economic war. There's been financial blockade. And for instance, when the government has tried to buy insulin, you've had transactions stopped by the banks because they will not transfer the $7.5 million necessary to purchase insulin or to purchase antiretroviral drugs. Back in November 2017, when I was there, there was a malaria outbreak in the Amazon region. Maduro wants to buy anti-malaria medicine from Colombia. Colombia says no. He has to go and buy it in India and flow it in. So the question is here, the cause of the crisis.
Okay, the cause of the crisis. Okay, Alfred. Because of your good behavior, Isaac has raised his hand, and he would like to jump in. Isaac, would you like to respond to what Alfred said?
Yeah,
Go ahead.
You cannot lie to people first. I mean, and first, I think the problem here is that we have a failed state, unable to provide basic things to people. And I won't talk about these scholars writing whatever about Venezuela. I'm talking about my family there, man. I'm not talking about abstractions, about data or statistics. I'm talking about the real life of people. When you have almost 4 million Venezuelans fleeing the country, do you think that they want to do that because they like to leave Venezuela? They want to have all the hardships, you know, going to Colombia, Brazil, Peru, even Argentina? No. Is because they are leaving
okay,
a situation.
But Isaac, you know, there's one way to kind of resolve. Hang on, Don. Everyone's raising their hand. That's great. I just wanted to say something to Isaac, then I will go directly to Don here. That's why we have elections, okay? And if the opposition doesn't want to participate in elections, then you're saying that you're giving way, all right? And you've given way, and that's what you get as a result here. And since the opposition hardly can speak to itself before all this, and now they won't speak to anyone for a negotiated end to this. And this is what the government has been saying. Don, you've been very patient. I have to give fair time to everyone. Don, go ahead.
Very quickly, first, at the beginning of this, If socialism is such a failed experiment, what is China? Because they consider themselves still a socialist and a communist state with Chinese characteristics. I have to say that it's important for people to keep in mind this thing that has to do with Venezuela's assets being, at the dock in U.S. courts, and that whoever ends up being the president recognized by the U.S. courts as president of Venezuela will be free to dispose of these. We're talking about $1.3 billion for Cristallix International over gold mine contracts, for example.
Yeah, but Don, we're talking about billions of dollars with Conoco and Phillips Petroleum. You bring up a very good point, but what if this Guaido guy can't get back into Venezuela? Is he just going to sit on all the wealth of Venezuela in a plush palatial New York apartment? Is he going to run the country there? I mean, my goodness, this is amazing. Alfred, you wanted to jump
Would he be
a billionaire in exile. Maybe that's not a bad option for him. Alfred, go ahead. Alfred, go ahead.
I think we all agree that we want genuinely to help the Venezuelan people out of this crisis. How to do it? I think through mediation. I think the Montevideo mechanism is a good idea. I think Antonio Guterres's proposal to offer the United Nations good offices is good. Michelle Bachelet, our High Commissioner, has been officially invited to visit the country. I think all of these are good initiatives. We have to calm down, and we have to go back to the UN Charter that prohibits the threat of and the use of force. We have to go back to the OAS Charter. I read you Article 19 of the OAS Charter that says no state or group of states has the right to intervene directly or indirectly for any reason whatever in the internal affairs of any state. Article 20, no state may use or encourage the use of coercive measures of an economic or political character in order to force the sovereign will of another state.
Okay, Alfred, I got to jump in here. I want to make sure everyone gets one more word in before we end. Isaac in Ottawa, go.
Yeah. Just briefly about the Charter of the Organization of American States. That's why Cuba was expelled in 61, because they interfered in the Venezuelan affairs. You know, they failed by invading through Machurucuto Beach, Venezuela, and they failed with the guerrilla in Venezuela. And Romulo Betancourt, the democratically elected president, you know, won the war against Cuba trying to invade Venezuela. That's why. Okay, let me tell you another thing about fair elections. Let me tell you another thing about fair elections in May 2018. Can you have fair elections when you ban candidates from the opposition to run, when you have candidates like Leopoldo López in prison, when you have Enrique Capriles banned to run?
Juan Guaido wasn't elected to anything, and he proclaims himself as the interim president of Venezuela. He was a stand-in, all right?
You are wrong. He's a deputy. He's a representative who was elected in the fair election that we had because the opposition fought for that fair election. Guaido was elected as a member of the Venezuelan parliament, and he was elected the president of the Venezuelan parliament. And according to the Venezuelan constitution, when you don't have
That is one interpretation. And gentlemen, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in New York, Geneva, and in Ottawa. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And please remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, communitypublicradio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.